this Bible study is going to be a little different. It's going to require you to put your thinking cap on. You know, the reason why I choose to do this Bible study is because God's been speaking to me as I pray and as I ponder on life in this culture that we live in. When I survey the current culture cultural landscape in the United States, I mean, it is clear. There's a clear sense that things are headed in the destructive direction. It's clear. There's no doubt about it. And it's not just going to be in the United States. I remember I was in a conference once. There was a young girl who came from Africa, all the way from Africa, and she made a statement I never forget. She says, "When the United States catch a cough, the rest of the world catch a cold." So that means the world is looking at our actions and how we behave. And the world, even things get even worse around the world when we don't do what we are called to do. So when I'm looking at the landscape and saying there is a clear sense that things are headed in a destructive direction. And while the symptoms of decline can be easily identified by most, we can identify, we could see it, everyone sees it. The moment I said it, everyone's like, yeah. But few are able to diagnose and address the root causes. What are the root causes of our problem here in this country and in the Western world and in the rest of the world? What are the root causes that is bringing us to this declining mode? But also I believe that the church is best situated to bring a remedy to the problem. However, the church is taking a reactive measure instead of a preventive measure. So in the church, we react to what the world does. Or then to pray to God that we can prevent how the country is going or how the world is going. For the Bible says we are the salt of the earth. We give meaning to the world. And if the salt loses its saltiness, well, the world loses its meaning. And, you know, they often say when you point a finger, four more comes back to you. So the church really needs to look at itself for us to look to see what can we do in this situation to prevent this country or prevent the world from going under. Thank you. And the only way the church of God can engage and help the culture make a successful U-turn. It can make a U-turn. The world has made U-turns before because of the people of God. Because we decide to be the salt that God called us to be. But the only way they're going to make that U-turn from this destructive direction, there is a valuable tool that every Christian needs to possess and needs to understand it, needs to be clear about it. And that is a firm concept of a worldview. And that's what our Bible study is going to be about, a worldview. Both. Because we have to understand what is the worldview, the current worldview, and what is a Christian worldview, and how to interact with people in order to change their mind, right? In order to change their mind. You have to know where they're coming from. See, a lot of time we end up fighting with people. Because this is what I'm witnessing right now. Whenever we hear things on TV or somebody stand up in opposition to what we know to be good, anger rise up. And it's almost like we want to fight people instead of transform people. Nothing good is going to happen when it turns into war. You know, but again, the reason why is because we truly don't know how to address this world. We truly don't know how to address this culture. Yes.
So is there a place for righteous indignation?
Would you say
that?
Because what you're saying, I'm totally agreeing with you. But there are times when you're certain things that we need to emphatically stand on and become some more of a righteous indignation. Yes. Yes, but it's still our job to season the world. How do we do that? You know, we can homeschool all of our children. We can decide to build Christian schools. The issue is, or stay in our own little Christian world, our church, and you know, don't engage the world. That's not the idea of Christianity, right? We can't stay in our own little side and say, let them destroy themselves. We are called to save. We are called to bring salvation, right, to people. So yeah, we're going to, and again, yes, we do have indignation. Yes, we do feel bad. Yes, we do need to stand. But again, why? Is it just because we are upset or that we are more righteous or because there's a hurt in our heart that, oh my God, these people are lost. And I must, as a Christian, reach out, find a way to reach out to them. And when I say the word I'm not just talking about you, but Christian as a whole, right? So we're talking about world. We're going to talk about worldview. How do you describe or define worldview? Anyone want to take a shot at a stab at it? When you say a worldview, what are you talking about? Yeah, yeah, it's that you can define it that way. Say it louder.
A system or a set of values for looking at the world as a whole.
Yeah, so a worldview is like a cerebellum, right? You know, that part in the back of your brain that, you know, do you know the purpose?
Cerebellum.
A cerebellum, okay? And its purpose is to coordinate and regulate, you know, muscles activity, right? Everyone has one. Everyone has one. And no one can live without one. But not everyone knows that they have one. It's the same thing as a worldview. Everyone has a worldview. Even when you can't describe what a worldview is, or define what a worldview is. Everyone has a worldview. No one can live without a worldview, but not everyone knows that they have a worldview. What is so important about a worldview? Our worldview plays a central and defining role in our lives. It is indispensable for decision making, as air is for breathing. You can't think without a worldview. You can't make decisions without a worldview. The way you behave is because of your worldview. So just as you can't breathe without air, you can't live without a worldview. Whether you're educated or uneducated, you're a liberal or you are a conservative, you're rich or you're poor, you're a believer or a non-believer, you have a worldview. And whoever you may be, you act and live in certain ways because you are guided by a particular worldview. Everyone acts and live in a particular way because they are guided by a set of worldview, by a certain worldview. So what exactly is a worldview? I'm gonna give different definitions. Some of them are simple until I get to, you know, to some definitions that I believe that really covers it, right? A worldview is your outlook or your perception of the world and how it should work. A worldview is your outlook or perception of the world and how it should work. This is how I perceive the world, and this is how I believe the world should work. Or you could say it is a comprehensive framework of ideas and attitude about everything that exists and everything that matters to us. And as I said before, worldviews largely determines your opinions on matter of ethics and politics. It's your worldview that decide, you know, what political party do you belong to? It's that also that tells you, you know, what's your ethics, what's your moral, what do you think about abortion? Have a lot to do with your worldview. Euthanasia, same sex relationship, public education or private education. Foreign aid, the use of military force, environmentalism. You know, I love to see this on television. You know, I love to see both political side fight, you know, or even Christians, you know, fight when they're talking about... what is it again? The word just left my mind. How about the climate? Climate change? Global warming. Climate change. Global warming. You know, and I'm watching people fight, and I'm watching Christians and non-Christians and different people with different political views. Man, I'm happy. You know? And somebody come to me and talk to me about global warming. I said, yes. I said, finally you're catching up to God. Because the Bible's been saying it for thousands of years. The heavens and the earth will pass away. Listen. The idea is not to fight about whether you agree about global warming or not. It's to find an opportunity to preach the gospel. When Apostle Paul got to Athens, you know, he sees a lot of gods. And he could have come there and says, you people are, you know, start, you know, fighting and, you know, cursing and all these other things. But he says, you people are very religious here. Look how many gods you have. And he's looking for an opportunity to preach the gospel. And he says, particularly this God right here, you say, the unknown God. I know him. I can tell you all about him. His eyes is not on all the other gods. In fact, the one they put the unknown God men in their worldview may not even have anything to do with the God we serve. But Paul is looking for an opportunity every time he gets to preach the gospel. Because he says, our purpose is to persuade men. So in everything, you always try to look for a way for God to intervene. For you to preach the gospel. Every time something comes up that bothers me, and especially, actually, I have a neighbor next door, you know, who tells me that he doesn't believe in God. And that bothers me. But then I began to think, God, how do I preach the gospel to him? How do I preach the gospel to him? Every time I see him, I find a way to get into a biblical conversation with him. So we can fight all we want, or we can find a way to preach the gospel. And sometimes I think we are more upset than God is. Because everything that happened on this earth, God is giving us an opportunity to preach the gospel, to make clear to people that their way, is not the way. So a worldview largely determines people's opinion on every matter. You could take the ones you agree on, or the ones you don't agree with. Any major issue of the day depends on your underlying worldview. So, as you can see then, your worldview plays a central and defining role in your life. Everyone's worldview plays a central role in their lives. I remember Pastor Joe was preaching once, and he says when he was at BU, and by that time, Pastor Joe was already a firm, established Christian. He grew up in the church. He loves the faith, and he lives the faith. And then one day, he says he was talking to a guy from the Middle East who asked him this question. If you were not raised in this continent, would you be a Christian? And because he didn't have an answer for that, I mean, he went into a whirlwind, right? He almost crashed. He almost crashed. And at that point, we could decide to fight and start bringing our own opinion, or go see God's face. How do I answer this question if I don't know? Even though you're firm in your faith. And at that point, you need to start making some researches as well. Why do I believe what I believe? Because I'm sure there are a lot of people who were raised in the Middle East that are Christians. So it has nothing to do with where you were raised. But it does have a lot of things to do with that as well. So worldview is the total of your beliefs about the world, the big picture that directs your daily decision and activities. A worldview is the total of your beliefs about the world, the big picture that directs your daily decisions and activities. I'm going to give you Ravi Zacharias' definition. I think his is pretty, pretty good. He said, it's a set of assumptions that you have made through which you look at every choice and every decision that ultimately shape your value and spiritual commitment in your day-to-day living. Let me say it again. A set of assumptions that you have made through which you look at every choice and every decision that ultimately shape your value and spiritual commitment in your day-to-day living. I think that really captures it, right? Our world is shaped by what we believe or willing to believe, how we interpret our experiences and how we behave in response to those experiences, our thoughts and our actions as well. Why is it so important for Christians to be fully aware of our worldview in this current culture? I'm going to give you five reasons. I'm going to talk about the importance of worldview, awareness. We have to be aware of our worldview. One is because a person's worldview is the foundation and framework of his or her thoughts and actions. A person's worldview is the foundation and framework of his or her thoughts and actions. In other words, what a person chooses to think or do is foundational to their worldview. So when a house is being built, the two most essential components are its foundation and its frame, right? When a house is being built, the two most essential components are its foundation and its frame.
And the electrical.
Yeah. I call this thing cosmetics. Yeah. Trust me.
Yes, I have.
The world have lived without it for thousands and thousands of years, right? But if your foundation is not right, you best bet you don't have a you won't have a home, right? Now listen, it's those two components that give the house its stability, its shape, and its structure, right? Those two things, the foundation and its in the frame. It gives the house its stability, its shape, and its structure. And a similar principle applies to human being. A human needs both foundational assumptions and a framework of guiding principle to provide stability, shape, and structure for his or her decisions and actions in life. For instance, if a person called himself an atheist, how do you suppose this person is going to live their lives? Huh? In that way, you could say that. But I understand what Garvel is saying as well, right? Because people who are atheists, or what they call them naturalism, they believe in nature, in the laws of nature. That's all that exists. They don't even care about meaning. Life has no meaning. So life has no meaning for them whatsoever. And when you're talking about morality, what are you talking about?
You define morality by according to what pleases them the most.
Yeah, they'll tell you do what you like. Yeah, but that's still...
If they believe in nature, that's survival of the fittest. It's not wrong for me to murder my husband if I'm hungry because survival of the fittest, hey, I'm going to eat him. That's what nature is.
Yeah.
But they all...
Well, every world, almost every worldview...
James got nervous.
Most of the there is about eight worldview in this world. right? I mean, religious worldview. But also, if you also take the naturalist worldview, they are correlate with the religious worldview in some way.
Some sense of right.
They just take the idea. I wasn't gonna do that, but let me do that now. Let's talk about a few of the worldviews in the world, and then I'll come back. Why is it important that you have a worldview? So, the first religious worldview is theism, right? That we are theists, right? We believe in God, right? Theists.
We're gonna help you out.
That you could go ahead. Theists, right? So when we talk about theism, right? When we're talking about God, right? So, and there is an atheist, right? There are pantheism. There are agnosticism, okay? There are polytheism, okay? We'll talk about that. I'm going to give you the definitions. So, and then there are more. There's finite godism. And there's panentheism, right? So a theist is a worldview that there is an infinite God, right? So that's us here, right? We believe that there is an infinite God, that he is personal. He creates the universe, and he exists beyond it and in it. Right? He's beyond it and he's in it because why? He is omnipresent. Right?
Are there multiple religions that are that?
Yes.
Like Muslims?
Only three.
Okay.
No. It's Christianity, Islam, and Judaism.
Okay.
Yeah. It's only three religions. Who are theists, right? Yes, right. So, yeah. So there are three great religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, right? And they all theists believe that the world was created by this eternal God, and miracles are possible, right? We believe that miracles are possible. People are made in God's image. There is what we call a moral law. And there is what we call punishment at the end, or rewards at the end, or what we call eternal life or eternal death, right? So that's basically the worldview of a Christian, right, if you summarize it. So before we say atheist, let's talk about deism. They believe in one God as well. Deism, T-D-E-I-S-M, deism, okay? They believe that God is an absolute unity, not a trinity, okay? God is an absolute unity, but is not a trinity. They believe that the universe and his creatures is God's creation. And human being is God's creation. They believe God designed it, but it run independent of God. No. So there's no miracle.
God went like this.
Yeah, so God is a deadbeat dad. Right? God is a deadbeat dad, right?
Can you give an example of this one religion?
What do you mean?
Deism. What would be considered?
A deism.
Well, people say they believe in God, but they do their own thing.
Well, no.
That would be Hindu.
No. Hinduism is slightly different because of the whole thing. Would you say Unitarian Universalists?
Unitarians.
Okay.
Yes. Unitarians, they don't believe in miracles, right? And what they believe is, yes, God did create the world. He designed it, right? But the world runs independent, okay? There are these natural laws that governs the world, okay? God does not intervene in the world with supernatural events, okay? So God just don't do that. So after God created the world and put us in it, he puts everything in the world to provide for us. And then God says, see you. All right? Well, an atheist is someone who does not believe in God. And so we often term them as well as naturalists. Right? As they only accept the existence of the natural and physical world. That's all there is. It's the natural world, the physical world. No more. So you'll find people like this usually believe in the Big Bang Theory, the Ape Theory, right? Evolution, right? Huh?
Out of Africa, that whole theory that we all came from.
Oh, yeah. So pantheism, I wasn't going to do that, but I'm going to do it now so I could get it out of the way. Pantheism is a little bit different. Anyone watch Star Wars? May the Force be with you. All right?
Don't tell me that's not real.
Pantheism is the belief that God is in all and all is God. Right? God is in all and all is God. That's Buddhism is kind of part of that, right? You know, it's God is in all and, you know, and all is God. That means you're God, I'm God, the chair is God. You know.
Can we stop for a second?
Yeah.
In John, Jesus says, have I not called you gods? Can you just touch on that really, really quick? But that always gets me. Really quick. And if you don't have time tonight, can we put a pen in it?
Yeah, that's
a
bigger question.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, and also in Psalm, right? There's something in Psalm that talks about that as well, right? Yeah. And then we have agnosticism, right? Agnostic.
Don't care.
Yeah. God is unknowable, right? If there is one, right? You know, it's... They're not necessarily rejecting that the idea that there is a God, but they make no claim to it as well. It is what it is, right? If there is a God, good. If there isn't, good. Right? And there's polytheism. So... Hindus.
Okay, gotcha.
Hindus.
Yep.
Yeah. Hindus,
right.
Back in the days,
like that, yeah.
The Greeks and the Romans, yeah. Right?
That's what I was thinking, but I don't think they were around.
Back in the days was the Greeks and the Romans when Paul went to Athens, yeah. Right?
Temples
all over the place. Right? So they believe in many gods, right? So there are many gods and goddesses, not just gods, but goddesses as well that exist. So every religion is fine with a polytheist, right? Every religion is fine, right? There's not one way. We can choose... whichever way we want to use. But if you're looking at it in non-religiously speaking, nowadays you'll hear people talk differently. They will call somebody a naturalist, right? There are no objection to truth and moral standard. Reality is ultimately a human social construction, right? So there is no truth in moral standard for naturalists. Right, this is somebody you would call an atheist, in some ways. But today they try to take the word religion out of it. So they would call that person a naturalist, right? Or again, pantheists, they would call it a pluralist, right? So they believe that different world religion present equally valid perspective. And on the ultimate reality, there are many valid paths to salvation, right? And you have the moralistic deism, right? And sometimes you could find it in church as well. God just wants us to be happy and nice to other people. He intervenes in our affairs only when we call on him to help us out. So there's this one, there is a mixture to it, right? They do believe in God, believe that God creates the world, but God only wants us to be happy. In fact, this is where deism come in. In fact, he doesn't really, get into our affairs only when we call upon him. Then he comes and intervenes, right? So each of these worldview has profound implications for how people think about themselves, what behaviors they consider right or wrong, and how they oriented their lives. So somebody doesn't have to say, I'm an atheist, or I'm in deist, or I'm a naturalist, or moralist, or a pantheist. Sometimes by hearing the person talk, you can say, oh, okay, this is where you stand. This is what you believe in. Then therefore, I need to know, how do I do apologetic with that person? How do I defend the faith? How do I approach this person to talk to them, right?
Did you say there were six of them?
Eight.
I only have six.
Yeah, I didn't. There are two I didn't give. Panentheism, P-A-N-E-N, and theism. It's almost the same thing with deism. That's the reason why. That's why I didn't give it. Also, finite godism. They believe in God, but God is finite. God is not infinite. Meaning, God is not existing in himself. God is not eternal. God does not get into our affairs, and so on, and so on. Okay? So let me go back to talk about... hold on. I'm going back. The importance of a worldview awareness. So if you are a theist, like we are, what is your foundational assumption? That there is a God. Right? That there is a God. And if you are an atheist, there is no God. And if you're a theist, your foundational assumption is that there is a God. But what becomes your framework now? The Bible becomes your framework. You live by it. You die by it. That's your framework for living. Right? If you are a theist, if you are somebody who believes in God, your assumption is that there is a God. Foundational assumption, there is a God, and the framework is God's word.
Because we were talking about foundations and frames.
Oh, so
each one has a foundation, and each one has a framework. And then you cannot reason without some basic presuppositions. Right? You cannot reason without some basic presupposition about what your experience, where they come from, what principle of reason you can apply to them. You got to have a presupposition where you coming from with what you're saying. The second reason why a worldview is important, our worldview is the single greatest influence on the way we interpret our experiences and respond to those experiences. We've been talking about Job, right? Why did Job react the way he did?
Because he already knew God.
Yeah, because of his worldview of who God is. Many times I've talked to people before that left Christianity because their mom died or because they lost their house or because they had an illness or because they were sick and no one from the church came to visit them. Your worldview of who God is, your worldview dictate how you behave and what actions you take. So, and that's the reason Jesus even goes farther and says, why do you call me Lord and do not do what I say? Because just as you said, you can take a position, a worldview, but you don't always follow. And it's the same thing with Christianity as well. There are a lot of people who takes, and even us, right? In certain times, we don't act the way we're supposed to act, right? Even though this is our worldview. But the demand that God put on us is that don't just say you believe. Act like you believe. Live like you believe. Behave like you believe. Talk like you believe. Because now, whatever happens, the way you interpret, the way you do your interpretation about life and anything that happens to you has a lot to do with your worldview. For instance, like Job, if you believe, did you see Job's worldview? Although the devil was the one who was doing everything to him, he never said the devil did. Because it's in his worldview that God is in charge. And there's nothing that can happen to him without God allowing to happen.
Yeah, he didn't say God gives and the devil takes away.
No. He never says that. His wife had that worldview as well. Curse God and die. But even in the text, if you read the text, what did they say? The Sabian came, right? Who else came? There were two different groups that came and stole his things. He could have said they took it. But even then, he brought it back to God. Because he believed everything he has comes from God. And even the devil understood that too. When the devil says to God, don't you put an edge on everything he has? Don't you protect everything he has? So for Job, his worldview is, whatever may happen to me, God is in charge. Therefore, I don't have to get to the middleman. I'm going straight to the source. But that's not true for every Christian. Well, yeah. It's not. Yeah. Well, the foundation can be strong. It could be a wrong foundation. right? A strong foundation that is wrongly built. And unless you allow God to break that foundation and rebuild it again, you're always going to be the way you are. So not only that a worldview is your foundation and your framework, but it also gives you ways to do interpretation of things that happens in life, your experience in life. Something happened to someone. Let me give you an example. When we talk about anxiety and depression, it has a lot to do with our expectations, right? Let me explain this. When I lived in New York, if I was in Manhattan, two cars bumped their, bumps together, it was normal. It's normal. Look, we just look at it and we keep moving. Even the guys, their cars hit each other, they don't even go down. It's like, oh. There's no stress, nothing. When they left their house, they expect for that to can happen. That's their worldview of where they live. But if you live in the country, somebody just slightly touch your car, you're going down, and you're going to call the cops, You're going to want this guy to wait there. Nope, don't move the car until the cop come, right? You're going to take pictures in all 9 yards where the person in the city just look at it and like, all right, yeah, we good.
That's why I call my New York mentality.
Mentality, right?
New York mentality.
It's because of their worldview of where they live and where they are. Make you behave and do your interpretation of what just happened here. Just think about it. About, what, was it 10 years now? The earthquake that happened in Haiti. About 9 years? 200,000 people died. I'm asking myself, how in the world does this, they just pick up and continue with life? I'm still asking myself that question today. If this happened here in the United States, boy, suicide, drug abuse would be just... It's all about the worldview. I think the worldview in Haiti is things happen, you pick up and continue with life. But in here, those things are not supposed to happen.
Yeah, those things devastate us.
They're not supposed to happen.
Right. 9/11 now?
Yeah. No. Yeah, I mean, again, it's that...
Wait, what? 1% of the... And we're still not over it.
Yeah, but it has to do... It has to do with our interpretation of things and how we... Our worldview, right? Our experience. All that has to do with it. Yeah.
What percent of Haiti was that 200,000?
I think there's about 9 million people in Haiti right now. So, yeah, it's about 9 million. So 10% would be what, 900,000? So you'd probably be 2-3%. That's a lot.
That's an exorbitant amount.
Yeah. No, that's...
Just carrying on.
Yeah, people... When I went down there on the first plane that was available. So the guy who's driving me for 2 weeks, I'm sitting with him, we eat, he drives me to different part of the country. Guy seemed normal. Everything's fine. And then a friend came by and talking to him and said, "I'm sorry." The chauffeur. "I'm sorry, man." And I'm like, "Whoa." And the guy outside started crying. And he's like, "Well, it's okay, it's life. That happened." Lost all his children in the earthquake. Well, yeah, it's the expectation, right? It's the worldview. It's like things happen, we move on because we can't fix it. When that happened in that car, I started crying. Because I'm like, I'm with you for like 2 weeks. You never say a word. And it was mind-boggling to me how that happened, right? How is it that two people live in the same neighborhood when we talk about interpretation of things that happens? All goes to the same church. And with very similar experiences, they can come to radically different conclusion about the world and how it should be or anything else that happens in their life. What you said? Oh, my laptop. Thank you. So if we're talking about worldview in the sense of worldview, there are many people who think that the scientific evidence, so let's say two people grow up in America, and one person believed that the scientific evidence support the Darwin theory, right? Then they believe it with overwhelming confidence, beyond dispute, any of that. And someone else they believe in God. How does this happen? That you can grow up in the same continent, same country, same neighborhood, same school, and two people have a different interpretation.
One better, you can have siblings.
Siblings, yes. But is it because one of them have data that the other one doesn't have?
I think so.
It could be.
Their life experience is still different from someone else's, even if they're in the same everything. Neighborhood.
But let me go even a little farther. Further. They could have the same data in their hands. Because science doesn't make the interpretation. Scientists does. You could have two scientists teaching at the same school, and one is a believer in God, and the other is not. Exactly. For some people, science brings you closer to God. For others, it's the other way around. In fact, I was watching a great debate not too long ago. What's that mathematician's name? Oh, he was debating Darkins, and he really got him. No, he teaches at Cambridge. This was his thing. The guy was talking about evolution. About there is no God and evolution and all. And then he said to the guy, "Well, do you know that evolution can't start until you have life?" And I was like, What are you evolving from? When he said that, this is the first time I see Dawkins, that's his name, right?
Hawkins.
This is the first time I saw him like, he didn't know how to respond to that. God said, okay, you tell me that I'm, actually he said, you're stupid to believe in God.
Mm-mm. Or Wiley against Bill Nye, the science guy.
Mm-mm.
On PBS. I know.
So what he said was, in fact, it was, it's because of the belief in Christianity, science make all the lips that lip and bounds that it makes. Because people wanted to get closer to God and know about this earth that God created. And he told them, well, you know, evolution cannot begin until life starts. So, evolution cannot account for life. But how did this happen? Again, it's the worldview, right? Third. Christians are called to think Christianly. God called us to think as a Christian, to think biblically, that the Bible is our worldview. The importance of worldview awareness, why we should be aware of our worldview in the worldview of others. It's because your worldview is the foundation and framework of your thinking and how you behave. Secondly, it is because it helps you do the interpretation of the world and everything that happens in it. And thirdly, as a Christian, God called you to think as a Christian. Should I?
Say that.
Our experience, the world, and our experience in the world. Is it in 1 Peter chapter 3? Can somebody read 1 Peter chapter 3? I think it starts at 8. You could start at 8, I think. 1 Peter chapter 3, I think you start at verse 8.
Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, tender-hearted, and courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing.
No, sorry, that's not it. I said 1 Peter 3. It's in 1 Peter 3, right?
Sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and always be ready.
Yes. Where was that? Where was that?
3:15.
Go ahead.
But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and always be ready to give a defense to anyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. Having a good conscience that when you defame,
First Peter 3:15, right? Let's slow there a little bit. So the Bible says, but in your heart, set Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone. And this is our mandate. And it's not talking to pastors or teachers. He's talking about the Christian as a whole. Be ready to give an answer to anyone why you believe what you believe. Why you have this worldview. And why you believe that it is the only way. So it is because God demand that we are aware of what our worldview is and that we're able to explain it to anyone and we're able to protect it. And the reason why you should be aware, number four, I had said that's the reason I wasn't going to give the definition of all the religions because of number four. Every religion reflects on a worldview. And every circular ideology reflects on a worldview. It's because of their worldview they believe the way they believe. It's because of your worldview you believe the way you believe. So in order for you to really evangelize to somebody, you have to understand where they're coming from. Some of the best who does it, when they have debate with atheists and so many others, I just love the way, the wisdom that these guys have. I agree with you, but they don't just discredit the person. I agree with you, but let me show you a different worldview than yours. In some way, somehow, they let the person make the decision. In some way, they don't say, this is the best. But they say it in a way the person's sitting there and like, I love the way Ravi Zachariah does it. But imagine, I'm not calling for everybody here or me or anyone to be a Ravi. That's a special gift that God has given this guy. Sometimes there's certain questions I hear somebody asking, I'm like, oh God, how is he going to answer this one? And then he answers it, I'm like, oh my God. How in the world did he do it that way? I forgot there was a guy who called him. Oh, there's a guy who tell him that, why are we so afraid that we need a book to tell us how to live our lives? What are you afraid of? There's nothing to be afraid of. And then he said, he came to the guy and said, what did you say? He says, why do you close your door at night? If there's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, the guy, you should have seen his face. What? If you say we should not be afraid, we should not have a book to tell us how to behave because everybody's good. Why do you close your door at night?
You don't actually believe that.
Why do you lock your car? It's because human being, David said it, we were born in sin. And our mother conceived us in it. And I was like, okay, how is he going to answer that? Why do you, that's all he said. Why do you close your door at night? And then he started getting into profound things, saying, we've killed more people in the last three wars we've had than the world has ever killed people. And we're talking about what are we afraid of? For a book to tell us how, why do we need a book to tell us how to live our lives? That is the exact reason why. Because humans are corrupt. We are sinful. And the reason why, again, number five, lastly, one of the most fruitful and effective way to engage this world that is going in this destructive direction is in term of their worldview. How they reflect on it. And just as I've been saying, if you don't know a person's worldview, it is very hard for you to do apologetic. Now, some people might say, well, I don't care about apologetics. Well, you just use the Bible. So what happened when you read somebody who says, well, yeah, I don't want you to use the Bible. Prove to me that there is a God without the Bible. Because their worldview is that the Bible is, there is no God, therefore the Bible is man-made. Why should I listen to the Bible? Now, how do you convince somebody who believes this way? Let me give you this four things. There are four particular questions that must be answered. And when they are put together, they form a worldview. This is how worldviews are formed. It's with these four questions. The question of origin. The question of meaning. The question of origin. The question of meaning, the question of morality, and the question of destiny. The question of origin, the question of meaning, the question of morality, and the question of destiny. Destiny. Well, that's the English. Mine is in French. Oh, destiné, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't want, you know, some people call us destine. He's like, no, destiné. That's Jeremiah for you. This boy's proud of his last name. The question of origin, who am I? Who am I? Where do I come from? How did I get here? Just because somebody have a worldview doesn't mean they're viewing the world rightly. Remember those glasses, those distorted glasses when you put it in your eyes? It distorts how you see things. And unless somebody have the right answer to this four question, everything in life is distorted. Where do I come from? Who am I? Next week, that's the question I'm going to ask before we start Bible study. What makes us human? Who am I? Where do I come from? How did I get here? Did I evolve from apes or Big Bang? Or was I created? So that's the first question that needs to be answered. Second question, why am I here for? What's the meaning of life? Why am I here for? What is the point of reference on the basis of which I determine something is good or bad? That's the question of morality. I said it before I say the third one, morality. Question of morality. What is the point of reference on the basis of which I determine something is good or bad? What is right and what is wrong? When Joseph said to Potiphar's wife, I can't do this to my God. God is the basis on which he decides what is right and what is wrong. I can't do this to my God. He didn't say, I can't do this to Potiphar, this is wrong. No, I can't do this to my God. That is his point of reference. If I do this, if I cheat on my wife and my husband, as a Christian, in your worldview should not be, she's going to be hurt. It's that God is going to be hurt. It goes beyond your wife or your husband, your girlfriend or your boyfriend. And in some ways, if you look at the laws in America, if you kill someone or do something wrong to somebody, you do something against the state or the country. In fact, sometimes I'm like, if somebody killed my son, why can't I find my own lawyer to go to court? Because I'm taking the prosecutor. He's not that good. You can't choose your own lawyer. The country, the state have to give you a lawyer. Because the crime was not against you, it was against the law of the land. So the land choose the lawyer. The defense could choose their own lawyer. But the person that is sinned against can't choose their own lawyer. The state appoints their own lawyer. And whether you think that lawyer is good or bad, it's not up to you. So we could get the idea of when we do wrong, that it's more than just the person that we do wrong to. Then there is a God, the ultimate moral authority, who is watching. So then on that basis, you can begin to look at what's wrong and what's right. Because you're not just going to be judged by me that you sin against. Or when David prayed, right? What did he say? Psalm 51. Against you and you alone have I sinned. He knew he sinned against Bathsheba, his husband, right? against his yeah. Because I hear a lot of preachers sometimes preach, you know. What was she doing naked? She was in her house. She had no choice. She couldn't fight the king. Are you kidding me? The king called you. The king is right even when the king is wrong. But David had a choice. And when he says, against you and you alone I've sinned, it was true. If you study David's life, although God loves David, it was after that sin, everything went downhill. Everything. Because when we do something, when we sin, we sin against God. So the question of morality, what is the point of reference? What is your point of reference for morality? Is it you or God? And the question of destiny. What happens to a human being when he or she dies? The atheists believe that when you die, you die. Well, since you began by accident anyway, right? There's no value to human's life.
They believe YOLO.
Yeah. How do you adopt this point of view? That you got here by accident? There's no meaning to your life. Therefore, anyone should be able to take your life. And that's the part you say no one agrees with. No one agrees with. But the reason why you behave the way you do is because you believe in destiny. You believe in eternity. You believe there is life after death. And if you don't, that's the reason why you behave the way you do as well. And when those questions remain unanswered, that person have a distorted glasses and on their, you know. In the way they view the world, although they believe it, but it's just not so. And when those four questions are answered and you put them together, that's when you have a biblical worldview, if they are answered properly. Who am I? What is the meaning of life? Who do I answer to? And where am I going? So every Christian have to have an answer to these four questions. And you have to be clear. And you have to be persuaded that you know your origin. In the beginning, God created. There's one of the other guys who does apologetic on YouTube. I forgot. I'm not good with name. It's bad. But I think somebody asked him, where does God come from? He says, what God are you talking about? Because you're not talking about the biblical God. Because that God doesn't exist. Because the Bible makes it clearly, in the beginning,
God already existed.
Well, let's talk on beginning time. God created the heavens, which is space, and the earth, which is matter. And you need all three of them in order to even have a beginning. And if God is the one who bring them to being, God cannot be confined by them. So with the just the beginning with those with that first sentence in the Bible tells you who God is. In the beginning, time, God created the heaven, space, and the earth, matter. And if he has to be the one who create them, and in order for him to create them, they have to be, because if you don't have space, where are you going to put matter? Right? So the question, where does God come from, is irrelevant. Unless you're talking about another God. But not the God of the Bible. So, and whenever you talk about, and whenever, so the first thing we're going to talk about is the question of origin. Whenever you talk about origin, where, how did I get here? Forces you to look to something else or someone else. Because if there's one thing that every human being agree on, is that we are not self-existent. What, you could have whatever worldview you have. The only thing that everyone agrees on this planet Earth, is that we are not self-existent. We did not make ourselves. So the naturalists tell you that it was some particles, you know, and in evolution, you know, with time and evolution happens, right?
But doesn't he do it away because their reincarnation and you come back around another time and now you're a butterfly?
Still got here. Reincarnation? But how did you get here?
So the initial incarnate.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no one, there's not one religion, there's not one worldview, there's not one person in this world who believes, unless they are crazy, who believes that we are self-existent. Not in any book, not in any philosophical book, not in any historical book. There's no book that will tell you that we were self-made, we are self-existent. So then the question is, how did we get here? And we're going to talk about how, we're also going to talk about how do you test that something is true? How do you test that something is true? And Ravi has a book. I read it a long time ago. I can't remember which book is that. But he says there are three tests. There are three tests to come to the truth. First of all, it has to be logically consistent. It has to be empirically adequate. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And it has to be existentially relevant.
Mm-hmm. Under those three, he breaks out like all these other things. There's like five things, four things. And this four things that you told us came out of that idea. So it's just, it's mind boggling.
Yeah. So it is very important for a Christian to have to be aware of their worldview. It is important that the Christian understand that whatever worldview, even ours, they are formed by these four questions. Our origin, how did we get here? Meaning, why are we here? Morality, how do we determine something is right or something is wrong? And destiny, where are you going to spend eternity? Is there life after death? And if there is, then you have to take morality seriously.
Yeah. I'd rather be right, or what's that thing they say? Oh, I believe in an afterlife. I'm just going to act as if there is.
Yeah.
I'd rather be wrong that way than right the other.
But we better be sure. Yeah. Right? As Christian, we better be sure. Yeah, we better be sure. You know, I just want to end, you know, by saying we better be sure. You know, I will end with, you know, with our brother Luke. You know, Luke says, let me read it. Luke chapter 1. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who are from the first, were eyewitnesses and servant of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been thought. So that you may know the certainty. We have to know the certainty of the things we believe. We have to know the Christian worldview and why it is superior than any other worldview. It's because when you put it to the test with all the other one, it passes with flying colors. We have to know that we are here because God, the earth and everything's created because God had us in mind. And if you look at how Genesis chapter 1 and 2 put it, God created everything and made the earth habitable before he made man. So, it's not an accident. There is some thought process after you being here. And if that is true, it means that there's a reason why you're here. If that is true, there is somebody to be accountable to. And if that is true, there's someone to answer to. So we'll delve in a little bit more next Sunday.
Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, sorry. I'm in another world.
He's in sermon mode.
But does anyone have a question, statement, or remark?
Really?
We'll be
in
2 minutes.
You're
going to
ask us that now?
No, this is good because this is what you have to be able to defend yourself on people, because people will attack on things like this, and if you don't have I've always wanted to have that
answered, you know, that kind of thing answered, to be able to defend our faith, you know.
Yeah, we'll work through it. We have 7 more weeks left. 7 more weeks left. All right. Sure.
Twice you used the word, I think, in your defining worldview, our assumptions.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Isn't that a weak word?
Okay. No. Well, again, if you're talking about worldview...